Good evening. Hi. Welcome. It's November 9th, 2023. The time is 20:51 hours Eastern Standard Time. Ward Green with you again. I'm realizing, well, there's a poem I want to share with you. It's an English traditional nursery rhyme. It goes like this. Peas porridge hot, peas porridge cold, peas porridge in the pot, 9 days old. I hope you enjoy that one, if you've not heard it. It is a beautiful use of rhyme. I was noticing it the other day and appreciating it more than I had before. But anyway, today's study, and we don't have, it's not that we don't have time to discuss these things. We don't have the ability. It's not the time. Because I was just talking about the chronology yesterday, that we don't have doubt about it. But yet, we're always open to new possibilities of improving it. So, in a sense, it seems like there's doubt, but it's not really doubt. We have the 300 years of Jephthah, and we have 1452 as the starting point, which is the crossing of the Jordan by Israel, the end of the 40 years in the wilderness. So, 1452, with the 300 years of Jephthah, we automatically jump 300 years to 1152, and that's the starting point for the 40 years of the Philistines' oppression of Israel, so we automatically jump right down to 1112. But not only that, we were able to arrive at the same exact point using the account of the judges and by calculating from 1452 using the different years of oppression as well as the years of peace. And we added them up and we came down. Now, there are other people who ignore the years of oppression and only take the years of peace. And so they have a much longer period for judges. So, I mean, and we can reevaluate all these things, but it's not going to fit into the chronology because we have, you know, we are absolutely anchored where we are. We can't change it. But we still, it's interesting to consider the other viewpoints. Even so, but in our case, we've got also another number from 1 Kings 6 and 1 that says 480 years. In addition to the 300 years of Jephthah, there's 480 years, or 479, being the 480th year from the Exodus in 1493 until the founding of the temple in the fourth year of King Solomon, 1014. So, or if we take the fourth year to be 1013, then of course we take the 480th to be 480, then we get, you know, the same number, don't we? 480, yeah, plus 1013 is 1493, it's the same thing. We arrive at 1493, but keep in mind that when the Jews said the third day, they could have meant the fourth day. That's the way their language was. Just keep that in mind. It's always, you know, you can always add one to the number they're saying. But from the crucifixion of Jesus to the beginning of King Frederick III's reign, let's consider that in our article, Born and Raised Today, chapter 11, paragraph 3. And I love you. From the crucifixion of Jesus to the beginning of King Frederick III's reign, there are 1,421 or 49 times 29 years, a number holding two divine factors of 7 in the factors, 7 times 7 equals 49. If Mr. Luther's New Testament publication, 1522 CE, we were talking about that before, is taken as the start of the Protestant Reformation, then this is... Let me fix my brightness here. I got a problem with brightness on my main, on one of my screens here. It's just too bright. Wait a minute, where is it? What was happening? What was it? Is that better or worse? Yeah, okay. Let's not adjust it too much. If Mr. Luther's New Testament publication in 1522 is taken as the start of the Protestant Reformation, then this is 7 times 10 years, 70 years, after Frederick was crowned, which was 1452. We also mentioned that on numerous occasions. And 1522 CE is also 1526 years after October of BCE 6, which is the birth year of Christ, with no zero year. And that equals 2 times 7 times 109 years. That's the number 1526. I've confirmed all these numbers. You can confirm all these calculations, and you should confirm them all for yourself if you're interested. There's a factor of 7 there, 2 times 7 times 109, in that number 1526 also. So the divine number 7 keeps cropping up. From Solomon's temple, completed in BCE 1007, in the genealogy. All these dates are from the genealogy, but some of them are better known from standard, conventional, modern chronology. The dates in the 14 and 1500s, for example, are standard in modern conventional history. But from Solomon's temple, BCE 1007, in the 8th month of year 11 of Solomon, that's from the Bible, the 8th month of year 11, with year 1 as 1017, year 11 would be 1007, until Jesus is born in BCE 6, that is from 1007, there elapsed 1001, which equals 143 times 7 years. There's a factor of 7 again. Again, note from Solomon's temple, November BCE 1007, which we just mentioned, that's the 8th month, November, in the Jewish calendar, until Luther, September 1522, from 1007, November, elapsed, that's September 1522, from November 1007 BCE, there elapsed 2527, because that's not a complete year from November to September, plus there's no zero year, so it's add the two numbers and subtract 2, and we get 2527 equals the number 7 times 19 times 19 years, which is again a factor of 7 contained in there. From the beginning of the new year, BCE 1006, after the year that Solomon's temple was completed, the new year, BCE 1006, until Christ was born in BCE 6, there are 1,000 years, which seems a typical representation of the 1,000 years of judgment given in the book of Revelation, chapter 20. So 1,001 years, if we count it from 1007, but 1,000 years from 1006, the new year, it's corresponding to the 1,000 years of judgment of Revelation, chapter 20, and meaning the judgment day during the resurrection of humankind. In the book of Revelation, that is, after which time Satan and unbelievers will be judged after the 1,000 years. There's a final reckoning. So that's from Revelation in the Bible. So the type occurring with Jesus being born and dying for the sins of mankind is also, because there was 1,000 years from Solomon to Jesus, is also a fitting illustration for the intended conquest of Satan in the latter time. From the book of Revelation, the 1,000 years of judgment corresponds to the 1,000 years between Solomon and Christ. For some reason, that 1,000 years seems to be a significant period of time in prophecy, or it's a typical representation in the case of Solomon, representing the Messiah as the king of Israel, because he was a very wise and powerful and important king of Israel. Solomon, he was the pinnacle of Israel before the kingdom was divided in two. The kingdom of Israel reached its pinnacle under Solomon, and that was 1,000 years before the birth of Jesus in BCE 6. So we have all these things that are well illustrated through numbers such as 7 and the number 1,000. It's fantastic to see that. That's the end of Born and Raised for today. today's proverb, little ones. I'm still excited though, because I'm not talking about it so much as I'm researching, but I want to talk about it, and I'm researching the time of Saul and David and trying to determine when these events happened in the life of King David and also King Saul. And that's what we're studying in the book of 1 Samuel too, which is coming up hopefully right now. But currently, we're 10 minutes into our study. Proverbs chapter 8 verse 1 says, "Does not wisdom keep calling out, and discernment keep giving forth its voice?" So wisdom, the spirit creature called wisdom, is known not just for knowledge, but for wisdom, which has to do with the teaching also, the declaration of knowledge is the aspect of wisdom that is so well noted there. Okay, let's continue our study now, little ones, of the wonderful book that we've been studying, 1 Samuel, and I'm gaining a much greater appreciation for the book of 1 Samuel myself in the past 9 days since we've been reading it. Now, there happened to be a man of Benjamin, since the people in chapter 8 we saw had demanded a king from Samuel. He demanded a king, and in the book of Josephus, in the book called Antiquities of the Jews that Josephus wrote, not part of the Bible, but it, so we don't rely on it, but he mentioned that Samuel was a judge with Saul as king for 18 years. So now that is also recorded somewhere else, also in Josephus, as being 22 years. That's what it says also. And there are people who say that King Saul was, he died 2 years after Samuel, and that if he therefore ruled 42 years, then that means Samuel was a judge, or at least he was a priest during the time, not judge anymore because a king had taken over, during King Saul's reign for 40 years, in addition to his own judgeship of 12 years from Josephus, which would be 52 years. And he apparently became judge in 1112, as we've asserted quite strongly. We know that in the genealogy, that's a fact. And if he was born in 1162, let's say, then he would be 50 years old when he became judge. We'd have to add the 40 years of his being still a priest during Saul's reign, would be 90 years old when he died. If he was born in 1172, he'd be 100 years old when he died. If Samuel was born, let's try and be clear, in 1172, and he lived until 1070, which was 40 years into Saul's reign, with Saul reigning 42 years. Well, even if we just said, then he'd be 102 years old. So if he would have been 100 years old if he was born in 1170, living until 1070 and dying. So nowhere does it mention, however, in how old Samuel was. In the Bible, we don't know how old he was when he died. But he could have lived 100 years old, according to that, or more. And Eli's age was 98. His age was mentioned, but Samuel's was not specifically mentioned. But I want to read something for you. Do we have time? I want to read these texts, though. Where is this? Oh, yeah. I want to read something that's important that we need to cover, I think. And that is the traditional account that Saul, this is from Kyle and DeLitch commentary, Saul reigned 40 years traditionally, is supposed to have arisen, according to the conjecture of Theneus, from the fact that his son Ish-bosheth was 40 years old when he began to reign. And the notion that, as he is not mentioned among the sons of Saul in 1 Samuel 14:49, he must have been born after the commencement of Saul's own reign. This conjecture is certainly a probable one, but it is much more natural to assume that as David and Solomon reigned 40 years, it arose from the desire to make Saul's reign equal to theirs. Now, I agree, this is very probable that the age of Ishbosheth means he is born after Saul began to reign, and therefore Saul reigned 42 years is a very logical thing and probable. But it's probable. That's the thing. But I disagree with this last statement that it's more natural to assume that they would have corrupted the scriptures in order to make Saul's reign equal to David's and Saul's. I mean, Solomon's. They wouldn't have done that. I mean, that's not logical or probable at all. It assumes a fault on behalf of the people who did the compiling of the scriptures or the transcribing of the scriptures. And we don't assume that about the scriptures. That's a faulty accusation there. But let's continue with our reading. It still seems probable that Saul's reign of 40 years, but even more importantly, the book of Acts says that Saul reigned 40 years, but some people say that includes the 7.5 years of Ishbosheth, his son, and therefore Saul only reigned 32 years. So we have to make up 10 years in our chronology somehow, if that were the case, which is not a problem because we'd have 25 years that we still are not certain about with the three judges that succeeded Jephthah. We could make up the difference, but it doesn't fit. 25 and 10 are not the same number. So we've already got it the way we want it with those judges where they are, ruling on the east of the Jordan. In one possible interpretation that fits our chronology very well, everything fits so perfectly, we don't need to have everybody explained time-wise chronologically, because not everything is chronologically significant. So 1 Samuel 9, now there happened to be a man of Benjamin, and his name was Kish. This is what happened. This is how the king was first appointed in Israel. This man, Kish, the son of Abiel, the son of Zeror, the son of Bekorath, the son of Aphiah, a Benjaminite, a man mighty in wealth. And he happened to have a son whose name was Saul, young and handsome. And there was no man of the sons of Israel that was handsomer than he from his shoulders upward. He was taller than all the people. Now that might mean that he looked handsome. That expression, from his shoulders upward, he was taller than all the people, that just might mean he was handsome. That might not have to do with his height at all. And the she-asses belonging to Kish, the father of Saul, got lost. So Kish said to Saul, his son, take, please, with you one of the attendants, and get up, go look for the she-asses. And he went passing through the mountainous region of Ephraim and passing on through the land of Shalisha. We'll see later that Saul had 32 people altogether in his company, including him. And they did not find them. And they went passing on through the land of Shealim, but they were not there. And he went passing on through the land of the Benjaminites, and they did not find them. They themselves came into the land of Zuph. And Saul, for his part, said to his attendant that was with him, do come and let us return, that my father may not quit attending to the she-asses and actually become anxious about us. But he said to him, look, please, there's a man of God in this city, and the man is held in honor. All that he says comes true without fail. Let us go there now. Perhaps he can tell us our way that we must go. At this, Saul said to his attendant, and if we should go, what shall we bring to the man? Because the bread itself has disappeared from our receptacles, and as a gift, there's nothing to bring to the man of the true God. What is there with us? So the attendant answered Saul once more and said, look, there is a quarter of a shekel of silver found in my hand, and I shall have to give it to the man of the true God, and he will have to tell us our way. In former times, in Israel, this was the way the man would have talked on his going to seek God. Come and let us go to the seer. For the prophet of today used to be called a seer in former times. Then Saul said to his attendant, your word is good. Do come, let us go. And they went their way to the city where the man of the true God was. while they were going up on the ascent to the city, they themselves found girls going out to draw water. So they said to them, "Is the seer in this place?" Then they answered them and said, "He is. Look, he is ahead of you. Hurry now, because today he has come to the city, for there is a sacrifice today for the people on the high place. As soon as you men come into the city, you will directly find him before he goes up to the high place to eat, because the people may not eat until his coming, for he is the one that blesses the sacrifice. First after that, those who are invited may eat. And now go up, because him, just now you will find him." Accordingly, they went on up to the city. As they were coming into the middle of the city, why, there was Samuel, coming out to meet them to go up to the high place. As for Jehovah, he had uncovered the ear of Samuel the day before Saul came, saying, "Tomorrow about this time I shall send to you a man from the land of Benjamin, and you must anoint him as leader over my people Israel, and he must save my people from the hand of the Philistines, because I have seen the affliction of my people, for their outcry has come to me." And Samuel himself saw Saul, and Jehovah, for his part, answered him, "Here is the man of whom I said to you, this is the one that will keep my people within bounds." Then Saul approached Samuel in the middle of the gate and said, "Do tell me, please, just where is the house of the seer?" And Samuel proceeded to answer Saul and say, "I am the seer. Go up before me to the high place, and you men must eat with me today, and I must send you away in the morning, and all that is in your heart I shall tell you. As regards the she-asses that were lost to you 3 days ago, do not set your heart on them, for they have been found. And to whom does all that is desirable of Israel belong? Is it not to you and to the whole house of your father?" At this Saul answered and said, "Am I not a Benjaminite of the smallest of the tribes of Israel, and my family the most insignificant of all the families of the tribe of Benjamin? So why have you spoken to me a thing like this?" Then Samuel took Saul and his attendant and brought them to the dining hall and gave them a place at the head of those invited. And they were about 30 men. Later Saul said to the cook, "Do give the portion that I have given to you, of which I said to you, put it away." At that the cook lifted off the leg and what was on it and put it before Saul. And he went on to say, "Here is what has been reserved. Put it before yourself. Eat, because to the appointed time they have reserved it for you, that you may eat with those invited." So Saul ate with Samuel on that day. Subsequently, they went down from the high place to the city, and he continued speaking with Saul on the housetop. Then they rose early, and it came about that as soon as the dawn ascended, Samuel proceeded to call Saul on the housetop, saying, "Do get up, that I may send you away." So Saul got up, and both of them, he and Samuel, went forth out of doors. While they were descending by the edge of the city, Samuel himself said to Saul, "Say to the attendant that he should pass on ahead of us." So he passed on. "And as for you, stand still now, that I may let you hear the word of God." That's the end of 1 Samuel chapter 9. I'm looking for the place. Does it say? I seem to remember. I remember reading somewhere about how many of them there were who went to meet with Saul. But maybe there's, according to what I just read, maybe I'll just search for that number. See if I can find it. The number 32. Where does it occur? Is it there? No, I don't see it. Anyway, somewhere, I thought I read somewhere that there were 32 men with Saul, including him, but I don't see it. I don't see it today. I don't see it right now. I've missed it when we were reading. Anyway, there's at least Saul and one attendant with him. It's not important, I don't think, at all. I just was curious to see whether I could confirm that there were more than just Saul and one attendant. However, it doesn't matter in the least. Now, Jeremiah. Oh, we're out of time. This is what Jehovah said to me. Go, and you must get for yourself a linen belt and put it upon your hips, but you must not bring it into any water. We're getting close to being out of time. So I got the belt in accord with the word of Jehovah and put it upon my hips. This is Jeremiah. And the word of Jehovah proceeded to occur to me a second time, saying, take the belt that you got that is upon your hips and rise up, go to the Euphrates and hide it there in a cleft of the crag. So I went and hid it by the Euphrates, just as Jehovah had commanded me. But it came about at the end of many days that Jehovah proceeded to say to me, rise up and go to the Euphrates and take from there the belt that I commanded you to hide there. Accordingly, I went to the Euphrates and dug and took the belt from the place in which I had hid it. And look, the belt had been ruined. It was not fit for anything. Then the word of Jehovah occurred to me, saying, this is what Jehovah has said. In the same way, I shall bring to ruin the pride of Judah and the abundant pride of Jerusalem. This bad people who are refusing to obey my words, who are walking in the stubbornness of their heart and who keep walking after other gods in order to serve them and to bow down to them, will also become just like this belt that is fit for nothing. For just as a belt clings to the hips of a man, so I caused the whole house of Israel and the whole house of Judah to cling even to me, is the utterance of Jehovah, in order to become to me a people and a name and a praise and something beautiful, but they did not obey. And you must say to them this word, this is what Jehovah the God of Israel has said. Every large jar is something that gets filled with wine, and they will certainly say to you, do we not positively know that every large jar is something that gets filled with wine? And you must say to them, this is what Jehovah has said. Here I am filling all the inhabitants of this land and the kings that are sitting for David upon his throne and the priests and the prophets and all the inhabitants of Jerusalem with drunkenness. This is during the time long after King David, of course, when Jeremiah began to prophesy during the time of King Josiah and continued until the king Zedekiah, who was the last king before the destruction of the temple by Nebuchadnezzar. And I would dash them one against the other, both the fathers and the sons at the same time. Because he had filled them with drunkenness in verse 13. He will dash them one against another. Is the utterance of Jehovah, I shall show no compassion, nor feel any sorrow, and I shall not have the mercy to keep from bringing them to ruin. Hear, you people, and give ear. Do not be haughty, for Jehovah himself has spoken. Give to Jehovah your God glory before he causes darkness and before your feet strike up against each other on the mountains at dusk. And you will certainly hope for the light, and you will actually make it deep shadow. He will turn it into thick gloom, and if you will not hear it in places of concealment, my soul will weep because of pride, and will positively shed tears, and my eye will run down with tears, because the drove of Jehovah will have been carried captive. Say to the king and to the lady, verse 18, seat yourselves in a lower place, for down from your heads your crown of beauty will certainly come. The cities of the south themselves have been shut up, so that there is no one opening them. Judah in its entirety has been taken into exile. It has been taken into exile completely. Raise your eyes and see those who are coming from the north. Where is the drove that one gave to you, your beautiful flock? What will you say when one turns his attention upon you, when you yourself have taught them as confidential friends right alongside you at the start? will not birth pangs themselves seize hold of you like those of a wife giving birth? And when you will say in your heart, why is it that these things have befallen me? Because of the abundance of your error, your skirts have been taken off as a cover. Your heels have been treated violently. Can a Cushite change his skin, or a leopard its spots? You yourselves would also be able to do good who are persons taught to do bad. So I shall scatter them like stubble that is passing along in the wind from the wilderness. This is your lot, your measured portion from me is the utterance of Jehovah, because you have forgotten me, and you keep putting your trust in falsehood. And I myself also will lift up your skirts over your face, and your dishonor will certainly be seen, your acts of adultery and your neighings, your loose conduct in prostitution. Upon the hills in the field, I have seen your disgusting things. Woe to you, O Jerusalem, you cannot be clean. After how much longer? And that's the end of Jeremiah chapter 13. Now let's do Hebrews, if we have time to do the last chapter of Hebrews. If I've got it already here, where is it? I think it's nearby. There's 12. Oh, 12 is good enough. And we can move on to 13 from there. Let your brotherly love continue. Do not forget hospitality, for through it some unknown to themselves entertained angels. Keep in mind those in prison bonds as though you have been bound with them, and those being ill-treated, since you yourselves are still in a body. Let marriage be honorable among all, and the marriage bed be without defilement, for God will judge fornicators and adulterers. Let your manner of life be free of the love of money, while you are content with the present things. For he has said, I will by no means leave you, nor by any means forsake you, so that we may be of good courage and say, Jehovah is my helper, I will not be afraid. What can man do to me? Remember those who are taking the lead among you, who have spoken the word of God to you, and as you contemplate how their conduct turns out, imitate their faith. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday and today and forever. Do not be carried away with various and strange teachings, for it is fine for the heart to be given firmness by undeserved kindness, not by eatables, by which those who occupy themselves with them have not been benefited. We have an altar from which those who do sacred service at the tent have no authority to eat. For the bodies of those animals whose blood is taken into the holy place by the high priest for sin are burned up outside the camp. Hence, Jesus also, that he might sanctify the people with his own blood, suffered outside the gate. Let us then go forth to him outside the camp, bearing the reproach he bore, for we do not have here a city that continues, but we are earnestly seeking the one to come. Through him let us always offer to God a sacrifice of praise, that is, the fruit of lips which make public declaration to his name. Moreover, do not forget the doing of good and the sharing of things with others, for with such sacrifices God is well pleased. Be obedient to those who are taking the lead among you, and be submissive, for they are keeping watch over your souls as those who will render an account, that they may do this with joy and not with sighing, for this would be damaging to you. Carry on prayer for us, for we trust we have an honest conscience, as we wish to conduct ourselves honestly in all things. But I exhort you more especially to do this, that I may be restored to you the sooner. Now may the God of peace, who brought up from the dead the great shepherd of the sheep with the blood of an everlasting covenant, our Lord Jesus, equip you in every good thing to do his will, performing in us through Jesus Christ that which is well-pleasing in his sight, to whom be the glory forever and ever. Amen. Now I exhort you, brothers, to bear with this word of encouragement, for I have indeed composed a letter to you in few words. Take note that our brother Timothy has been released, with whom, if he comes quite soon, I shall see you. Give my greetings to all those who are taking the lead among you, and to all the holy ones. Those in Italy send you their greetings. The undeserved kindness be with all of you. Well, we got done in time, but now we're over time in a couple of seconds. But I want to say one comment on Hebrews is that we know Paul wrote this, or it's more convincing because he mentions Timothy as the brother. And he mentions Timothy in his other letters, and in other places we know that Paul is acquainted with Timothy. So this is evidence also that Paul wrote this letter, and also we know that Paul was in Italy. He was in Rome, in fact, so at some time he was in Rome. So when he writes, those in Italy send you their greetings, it's also indicating that this is indeed a letter of the Apostle Paul. That's the end of the book of Hebrews, by the way. A lot of good things in chapter 13. And that's all for today's study. I hope you had the pleasure of joining us, and I hope you will join us again. It is November 9th, 2023, the time, 21:26 hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much, and this is, in my behalf, Crow and Cassie saying bye for now.